I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today is the amiable Father Garrett Burns.
Hello.
And the affable Father Drew Hoffman.
All right.
And we are broadcasting today from the St. John of the Cross studio. So a special dedication, as you all know, if you listen to this podcast regularly, that's my knight's name, Sir John of the Cross, which I share with Josh Manns. And so I would like to publicly bury the hatchet and dedicate this episode to Josh. So I forgive you. You were wrong, but you are forgiven.
Wow.
Let's get Josh
Moments
on the pod.
Moments of reconciliation.
I actually run into him every little bit because I go do mass at Carroll, and so I'll see him in the hallways or doing
glare
that.
At him, yeah, and just,
that's right.
He's throw at evening things. Mass at St. Paul.
Oh, is he?
Every once in a while, yeah. Huh?
Let him know that being the bigger man, I have forgiven him and buried the hatchet.
Oh, so you're going to give up the... Your surname? Is that
yeah, because only one guy should have it, Chad.
That's not what I'm saying. Forgiveness does not...
Mean forgetting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will never forget. Well, we had a professor at the Mount one time that told us, you know, John of the Cross, his writing is dense. If any of our listeners ever tried to read it. And he would tell us, this priest, that when you think you're ready for John of the Cross, take it off the shelf and then put it back on the shelf because you're not ready for it yet. And that's mostly been true for me in my life. Every time I've tried to read John of the Cross, I'm like, nope, this is still too far beyond me. But what I do like that I have discovered is his poetry. And I'm not a poetry guy, but if you ever have a chance to read John of the Cross's poetry, either in Spanish or English, it's really good. I have the guys in celibacy class read some of it because it actually expresses what we were talking about last episode, a great deal of intimacy. And so there's some beautiful expressions in there. But the work that I own of John of the Cross, one of the things that's really cool to me about it is just a giant volume of his collected works, poetry, reading them. But on the cover is a picture of Jesus crucified that John of the Cross himself drew. And to me, that's just a cool aspect of the saint. This great mystical person in his free time liked to draw. I don't know. That's just really cool to me. I find art interesting. I don't know if I'd quite say I grew up in a quote unquote artistic house, but it was around. Like, my grandmother taught us, she was kind of a folk artist. And so she gave us grandchildren painting lessons on occasion. My dad took painting lessons. When growing up, we had pictures that he had painted hanging around the house. We've got a really cool image when he was dating my mom and was too poor to afford actual gifts, did a charcoal drawing of her as a young woman that we had, which is, it's cool. One of my brothers can just picture things in his head, and I don't know how he does it, but, you know, fantasy sort of things. He can just draw amazing things. I've always been envious of guys that can draw. Do either of you draw?
No.
Not at all.
Yeah. A big no.
Okay.
I was seeing what he was doing. Huge nose from us.
Huge nose.
My best work of art was in third grade when I drew I was going to be either a basketball player or a priest.
Famous image, yes. Yeah.
I do like to draw. I'm not good. I like to paint. So I still, again, not at all good at it. But here in the, I probably told you guys before, up in the attic of the house, I have a little painting area that I've just set up a little easel and stuff. And about every couple of weeks, I'll pour myself a little bourbon, put a record on, and I just go up there, paint for a couple hours in the evening. So it's relaxing to me. I like it. I guess that's a long way of saying I like art. And as I get older, art museums are even more interesting to me. I spend a lot more time on vacation in art museums anymore. I look forward to that. Like, I plan trips around. I'm going to hit the art museum. And so I was just curious. I know some of the images that are really moving for me. Are there particular images you guys like to pray with, or that you go to regularly, or you look forward to seeing and praying with?
My favorite, I have it in my office. I always have had it in my office, and it's always in a place that I'm looking at it most of the time. It's called the Theotokos of Vladimir, which is an image of the Blessed Mother holding baby Jesus. And in the one that I have, so Jesus got kind of his arms around the Blessed Mother. He's kind of hanging off of her. The way her eyes are painted, she's always looking at you wherever you are in the office. So especially if I'm telling people about it, where they're sitting, where I'm sitting, she's looking at you. And so I like this image that, like, Mary, wherever I'm at, is looking at me. She's keeping an eye on me wherever I'm at. Then the way Jesus is looking at Mary and hanging on her, he's staring at her as if, I will say yes to anything you ask me to do. Jesus is saying to his mom, okay, what are you looking at? I'll do whatever you're wanting to do. Because I know if you're looking at something, it's worth my attention. And so I love that. It's like Mary keeping an eye on me and Jesus' willingness to do whatever his mother asks him to do. I found tremendously comforting. So that image, and then Our Lady of Perpetual Help, the image of Jesus running to Mary and his sandals are broken because he had a nightmare of the crucifixion one night. And so sprinting into the arms of the Blessed Mother during a difficult, trying time. Both those, again, both Marian images are the two that come to my heart most often. Yeah.
I've got Perpetual Help hanging over my bedside and in my bedroom, right over my bed. I'm a big fan of that image. I've not seen the other one. Is that in your office at WSU?
Uh-huh.
Yep. I'll have to check that out. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I'll be there tomorrow.
That's right. Pop on in.
Yeah, go take a look at that. How about you, Gare?
Yeah, I mentioned in the last podcast, the Divine Mercy. And yeah, I think just like it's so dark and feels like pitch black around Jesus in that.
Mm.
But then obviously emanating from his heart, these rays, blood and water gushing forth from his heart of mercy and grace for me and for the world. And so, especially, like I said, I go to that a lot at the end of the day. And if that's my own weakness and sinfulness, if that's just the darkness of the world that I've encountered that day, and just kind of giving that over and bringing that into the light of his heart that's being poured out, is really powerful for me most days. One that's I first encountered a conception class. I think I talked about it before, of how to look at art, which I love that that is just the name of a class of just like, you kind of tilt your head and you know, say, yes, yes, I see. Mm. But it was good for me because I did not know how to look at art, you know, just the structures of it and everything. But the one piece that I go back to a lot in my prayer, I don't have one, but it's just the Caravaggio's Narcissus. And so basically just Narcissus, the myth, he goes and gets trapped in the view of himself in the reflection of a pond and just never goes and eats. And so he dies. But just in the image, you can just see the circle around him and he gets trapped in himself, basically. And so that's always been a good image for me sometimes of prayer, unfortunately. And like, okay, break out of myself. You should not be thinking here. And just whenever I get wrapped up in myself, that's like a good invitation to get out of that. And then in discernment, Henry Ossawa Tanner's Annunciation is one I really liked, of Angel Gabriel is depicted as just this ray of light.
Oh, yeah.
And then in Mary, it seems like a very, I don't know, human, normal thing. Mm-hmm. She's just kind of there and her arms are flowing off her bed and she's just sitting there and she looks just like a beautiful young woman, but not this kind of pietistic thing. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like this supernatural thing has been infused into this. And then just praying with that moment of the Annunciation and inviting me into that to say fiat to the Lord.
Yeah, that image hangs in Bishop's conference room downtown.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Blessed Sacrament has it. If you drive by Blessed Sacrament, it's off Douglas there.
Right. You know a wild story about Divine Mercy, the image itself? So St. Faustina at the time, so she's Polish. When she initially received the vision, she was in a convent in Lithuania. Lithuania and Poland have like a sibling relationship that they're a lot alike, but they don't always get along because of that. And no one took it super seriously when she originally had the image made because the rays coming out of Jesus' heart are white and red. And so those are the Polish national colors. Oh. And so she's in a Lithuanian convent, like just another of these Polish people just putting Polish.
Really?
Yeah. And so like the first image was painted at the Lithuanian convent. And you can still go to that convent and it's there, but it never got a lot of traction until she moved to a different convent. Wow. She moved within the order. But yeah, the first one, they kind of thought she was just being Polish nationalistic. We humans are dumb sometimes.
Yeah.
Like somebody brought it from Nebraska and they're like, nah, it's like a go big red thing.
Jesus Boo. Of the cornfields. Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't believe in that.
That's funny.
Yeah, I pray with a lot of art, but a couple of my favorite images, there's this image by an artist named Eugene Delacroix, who's a fairly well-known French artist, of Jacob wrestling with the angel. So it was close, a little bit before I was to be ordained, and I was just kind of wrestling with my own vocation, and I happened to be in Paris at the time. And it's been out around all day, worn out. I'm by myself because all the friends that were traveling with me were worn out. They'd gone back to the hotel. So I'm just kind of going through the streets of Paris and it starts raining. And so I just duck into this church to get out of the rain, Saint-Sulpice, and Turns out it's a very famous church. I was going to say,
did you not know you were at Saint-Sulpice?
I did not. Yeah.
Was that not on the itinerary? What was the...
I was only there for a day and a half and did not make it on my itinerary. I just happened to be there for other reasons. That's awesome. I pop into Saint-Sulpice, and in the back, there's a little side chapel called the Chapel of the Angels, which is painted all by Eugene Delacroix. And everywhere I'd been in Paris that day, it was crowded. For whatever reason, that spot was empty, and there was a single cane-back chair. And so I'm tired, I'm wet. I just sit it down in front of this image of Jacob wrestling in the angel, and I probably spent 45 minutes just praying there, because if you look at the image, Jacob is just, every muscle is straining, and he's trying to overpower and make his will, and the angel is very calm and just contained. I'm like, you know, wear yourself out. Whatever you got to do, just, and it just, that's where I was at in my vocation. I was Jacob. I was straining with all of that and just realizing, what am I doing? And so there was a great moment of just peace and realization. So then I went back further in the church to pray. There happened to be having adoration at the back of the church, which happened to be upon the altar St. Louis de Montfort said his first mass on, which I didn't find out till later, but prayed some adoration back there. So I love that image by Eugene Delacroix of Jacob wrestling the angel. In fact, I bought a copy of it. I have it hanging outside our chapel here at the House of Formation because it's such a powerful image for me. Another image I really look forward to, or I like praying with, and I pray with it often, is in our cathedral. If anyone's ever been to the cathedral in Wichita, on either side, there's these giant images of the saints processing towards the altar, towards the tabernacle, and they're robed in white, and each of them are carrying something as a sign of the gift that they're bringing to the Lord. Well, if you're looking at the altar from the baptismal font, on the left-hand side, there is an older one, and he just has his arms open, and he's the priest, and his gift to the Lord is himself. And so he's not carrying anything in his hands. He just has this arms open of giving himself to God. And I still find that image moving. Like when I go to the cathedral, that is a spot that will arrest me, and I will have to stop and pray with that image. And I always, anytime we're there for big liturgies, I try and position myself on that side so I can pray with that image, because that's, yeah, I love the imagery of it. I love that it's specific to our cathedral, and it's one of my favorite images to pray with. I go to that one a lot. And it's interesting that you mentioned, Drew, the Madonna and Child, both of your favorite being those images, because I don't know how you would determine this. I don't know if this is even true, but I feel like I read someplace somewhere that the most common theme painted in of religious themes is Mary and the child Jesus.
Yeah, I think it has to be. I'm certain like, that that's
more
the case.
Than the crucifixion, yeah. More than anything else is Mary and Jesus. And so that kind of blends in where I want to talk about as our main topic today is simply the Blessed Mother. You know, she holds a privileged place in Catholicism, as she should, and a privileged place specifically among priests. We refer to her as the Mother of Priests. And so it's fitting that we talk about her role a little bit in discernment. I think we've talked about the Blessed Mother tangentially in a number of places of the podcast, but I don't know if we've ever addressed it head on of her role either in discernment in a general sense or her role in our own specific sense. And we're all Knights of the Holy Queen. We've all done the consecration to Jesus through Mary, according to St. Louis de Montfort. So I imagine she has had a role in each of our lives. So I'll throw that door open for our podcast today. What role has the Blessed Virgin played in our lives or should play in a young man or young woman who's discerning their vocation?
Yeah, I remember it was on our Holy Land pilgrimage, and the priest, I forget, maybe it must have been a Marian feast day, or I forget what site we were at, but he just said, you know, it just logically follows, like if the incarnation happened through Mary, then any new incarnation in an altar Christus and in persona Christi must and will happen, but through the Blessed Virgin Mary and her intercession and her care for you. And so like that, like mentally clicked with my experience that had been the 10 years before that, of that's what she had led me there. Like I remember one guy in seminary, you know, it was just like go around the room of why are you here or something like that. And he just said simply like, Mary brought me here. Like I don't have another explanation as to why I'm at seminary other than Mary has brought me here. So yeah, that was true of my experience through tons of different things. Like I shared before, one of the real just clarity moments was at, you know, a priest's funeral and all the priests sang the Salve Regina.
Yeah.
And just knowing that, that's how I wanted to leave the world. And so I should live like that priest. And so, yeah, she's been there the whole way.
Yeah. I have this really vivid memory of starting Totus Tuus, teaching Totus Tuus, between freshman and sophomore year of college. So right as my vocation is starting to blossom, and I had heard a story about John Paul II after his mother died, rushing to the church to a statue of the Blessed Mother and saying, "You're my mother now." And my mom's still alive, and she's the best. But I was at this training kind of confused as to how my summer and my life was going to move forward, what I was going to do with my life. And I was sitting on the kind of left side, and so the Blessed Mother statue's in front, and having that same experience. You're my mother now, right? You're going to have to take care of me, because otherwise I don't really know what to do. And so that's starting a long, long, long line that now whenever I went to a church, I always made sure I sat on the Marian side of the chapel. And having this again and again and again and again and again, I cannot overstate how many times she has seen me through something. She has untied the knot. She has calmed down. She has put her arms or her mantle around me again and again and again and again. I can't overstate how influential she's been on this vocation.
Yeah, this is another one kind of similar to last podcast where we were talking about intimacy in the Lord. I don't know really always how to articulate
sure.
it. Like my symbol, she's always there. What her exact role, or is there a monumental, okay, her direct intervention or intercession? I don't doubt that it's happened. Am I fully aware of it? I'm not, but she's always there. It's almost like, I think sometimes I hear people describe their relationship with the Blessed Mother, and they describe it more analogous maybe to a small child and the mother, and it's a very tender, hands-on, pick you up and direct you, which is great and beautiful and wonderful. That's not how I feel like I experience my relationship with the Blessed Mother. It'd be more like maybe an older adult child with that. Yeah, she's just always there. She may not be sitting right next to me, but I know her presence, and I gain from her wisdom. I find myself again and again drawn to images of her. Another great image to pray with, we were talking about that, but is that Mary, the first disciple at the Spiritual Life Center in the chapel there. I love that big painting in there. I don't know why, but again, I can't quite say why I like that, but I do. And that's my whole relationship with the Blessed Mother. I did one of my master's papers on Marian apparitions. The first parish that I was assigned to was Our Lady of Lourdes. And I made a promise I would go to Lourdes someday. And I've been there and I prayed there. And it's not like there was this giant shift, like, well, there was before this and there was after this, but that she has been with me in that entire time of moving towards the Lord. You know, big believer in the scapular, of always got my scapular, miraculous medal. I hand those out. I believe it and I live it, and it's a sincere thing, but it's harder for me to describe an exact moment. So and there's a little bit of a selfishness, I think, when I pose this question. I was just curious where your guys' experience are, because I don't know how to describe mine. At the end of my chaplet, you know, she's one of the petitions, or one of the saints I petition when I do the chaplet each day. And my regular petition to her is, help me to love the Lord more because I don't know how. And I think that sums up my relationship with the Blessed Mother is, I trust you. I believe you. I know you're there. I need your help. I don't know how. And I don't know if I'm going to be always consciously aware of the moment, but I just know you are there leading me towards the Lord in ways that I don't know how. And it feels like a nebulous way to describe it. It feels like I'm not even saying anything there. I don't know, but that's, I don't know how to describe it, I guess, at the end of the day.
I like what you said, though, about there is some of those moments of just tender of, you're more like an infant in her arms, but more and more through discernment, it felt like a more mature like conversation. And you would go to a mother with like, man, I got this big decision, or I don't know about this. And maybe it was in Brandon's book, he kind of combined Mary with fears. And so I remember reading that, like, if you have any fears in discernment, and he united that with the Blessed Mother. And so that maybe just made sense to me. And so whenever fears came up, I remember that's where I would go in my daily rosary, especially of just like, I'm worried about I'm not going to be a good preacher. I'm worried about celibacy. I'm worried about getting along with everyone in the parish, or with being friends with other priests, and whatever the fear was that was on my mind and heart that day, and just going there in my rosary. And sometimes it was just a calming presence, like Our Lady Guadalupe says, just, you know, am I not your mother? And sometimes that's all she needed to say was, she didn't really give a counter argument to why celibacy was just going to be just fine. It was just like, am I not your mother? Have I not been here since the first day? Am I not going to be with you every day? Sometimes I feel like that's all she needed to say. And then sometimes she would kind of convert some of those fears and allow me to overcome them. But that was a big experience for me of just a daily rosary. Some of my favorite moments of prayer throughout seminary a lot of times at beautiful places, you know, both Conception and Mundelein especially. And I even liked walking around Kenrick and just praying my rosary and giving that time and space to walk with Mary.
Yeah, the rosary has been the great gift of my priesthood, I would say. The Mass, of course, is a higher prayer and is the closer intimacy with the Lord. It absolutely is. But the rosary has been, as Padre Pio says, like holding the Blessed Mother's hand. Mm-hmm. And so again and again, and walking college campuses now as a priest, how I do it. The students just know when they see me, they just know when I'm in the union or I'm walking on campus or I'm leaving the center and they're wondering what's going on. I'm praying my rosary on campus a few times a day, both for the students, praying for campus, students, community, and also the heaviness, something going on, a knot I can't untie, a situation with a student that I don't see how it can get fixed. And again, just a perfect record of taking care of it. Perfect, undefeated record of taking care of it.
Yeah, I would echo that devotion, faithfulness to the rosary. I think in every room that I have, every space that's mine, I have an image of the Blessed Mother and I have a rosary. Yeah. I don't like to carry it around my pocket. Just that's my weird, I don't like things in my pocket. I don't like the feel of it. So I don't carry a rosary, but I don't need to because every office, every room has two or three rosaries tucked away somewhere. They're always available. And we talk about, again, Protestants, well, you know, jab Catholics at this Marian prayer. And it's funny, I don't even think of the rosary as a Marian prayer. I mean, it clearly is. And maybe it's one of those things like I take it so much for granted. Like, you know, you grow up with parents that love you and you just don't realize it could be other ways. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how, like, I guess that really is how the parental aspect of the Blessed Mother and how the rosary is in my life is I just take it for granted. It's not a Marian prayer. It's just what you do. And because, yeah, you take intentions through it or you meditate on the gospel through it. You reflect on the situation of the day. And just again and again and again, every day I'm going to that rosary and I feel like there's something missing when that's not there. You know, it took some years to make that the habit, but I almost just like, I don't even think of it as a Marian prayer, but it is. I just take it for granted, I guess. Maybe that's how Blessed Mother. Maybe I just take what you do for me and who you are for granted. And
isn't that how we always treat moms, though? Like the nature of how we treat our moms?
That's true.
Taking for granted the experience, and moms are okay with that, actually. Not in like a, hey, it doesn't matter. You don't need to thank your mom or something like that. But they know, a parent knows that that's the deal. Like there isn't this need to like apologize. You know, we've had some stuff with students of having to get some housing with our focus missionaries worked out. And it's been kind of a situation where we're trying to solve and we got it all solved pretty much. But it's like, no, that's my job as a dad, spiritual dad. My job is to help you get this this figured out. Well, that's a mom's job too. They understand that. And the Blessed Mother lives that out, I think, best of all.
I love that image. I think that's fantastic. Maybe not fantastic in who we are, but the reality, that is kind of the nature of moms. We take them for granted. You know, growing up, that was my dad. That was one of his roles, was to make sure we didn't take mom for granted. You know, your mother's birthday is coming up, or Mother's Day, here's some money, go get some flowers. She likes cards, make sure you get that. Make sure the house is clean when she gets home. And in some way, even though obviously our Lord is more important than the Blessed Mother, you could almost see the Lord saying, make sure you remember the Blessed Mother too, and kind of pointing us a little bit in that direction.
And what's the old Father Pat saying?
Never do anything to make your mother cry.
That's right.
Yeah. Feel like maybe we need to go around the podcast room and each apologize to our mother for taking them for granted.
That's for sure the case.
I just assume she knows that. I don't even need to say it. She knows. I'll take that one for granted too.
I was going to say, I love bringing that line up to Father Pat. He always used to say that at night to the Queen, never do anything to make your mother cry. And then obviously, like, you know, the Manitergium, when you give your mom the Manitergium on your first Mass, she's just like bawling. I'm like, what? Sorry, Father Pat. I wasn't trying to make her cry, but
that's great. A little bit of a different direction, I guess. The Annunciation, I always found, is like the comforting scripture passage in my discernment. Yep. And so that's maybe a more practical of in discernment, the Annunciation. I even wrote that in my letter to Bishop. You write a letter to Bishop. I don't know if that was the case when you were ordained as well, but in the lead up to, I think, our diaconate ordination, we had to write a letter to Bishop about our discernment, why we thought it would be a priest. I talked about the Annunciation as kind of the great meditation of my discernment, what I go back to the most and what I hope to be. And this Blessed Mother's docility, let it be done. I don't quite understand. I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be some crosses here. If you say so, I'll be brave enough.
I agree completely with the idea of the Annunciation as the image I prayed with probably the most in my discernment. When I was in high school, we have the dinners with Bishop that, you know, that your pastor or your chaplain may bring you that. And at that time, they were pretty small affairs. And I had Father Pat York took me to one. And at the end of the dinner, Bishop Gerber gave us each an image of the Annunciation, you know, not bigger than maybe 2 inches by 2 inches. And it's just a reprint of a famous painting on a little bit of wood. I still have that on my desk today. He gave that to me when I was 17 years old. And that image of the Annunciation has been on every desk as college student, as seminarian, as priest. It is on my desk right now down at the vocations office. And I return to that image again and again. It was a great source of comfort and guidance when I was discerning, and still is when I'm making hard decisions. Cool second part of that story is a number of years back, Bishop Gerber passed away. And someone, and when they were going through his things, found a box of these images, and somehow it came, they're like, we don't know what these are for. I'm like, I know exactly what those are for. And so I took them back to the vocations office and was able to start handing them out again. So there, I don't have any more left. I'm looking for that image to reprint someday onto that, because it was such a powerful help for me in my discernment, that image of the Annunciation, and trying to make my will like the Blessed Mother's towards our Lord.
Yeah, you shared that with me last year, so I started making their just like little photo prints or whatever, but of the Annunciation picture I referenced earlier from Henry Oswald Tanner, and so that's what I give to the guys that come to the high school discernment groups.
Oh, nice.
So,
good call. Little plug, guys, if you're a Capernaum Carol and you want a nice little Annunciation image, just come to the discernment groups at the high schools, and I'll get you one.
The men who came with me to the discernment group, I have your gift. I just
got it.
So I do still have it. It's 2 months ago at this point, but I didn't just forget or not think that was something we should do.
Those who enter seminary, I give you your gift after you're ordained.
It
comes then.
And a free education.
And a free education, you know, a small thing.
Yeah.
I love when guys tell me, I don't know if I can go to the seminary. I've got a really good scholarship. Yeah, I can get you a full ride. I know a place.
Who was that? Will
Hudson.
Will Hudson. Whenever Bishop Jakels would see Will Hudson, and he'd hear Will Hudson was majoring like in philosophy and theology at Benedictine, he would always be like, you know, I'll pay for you to do that.
And I think Will Hudson now works at a seminary.
He does.
He does, yeah, right? Maybe in Milwaukee or something?
Yep. The very first discernment group I did as an associate priest was organized by Will and for Will, and none of them are priest today. So
The Kenny Walker, Will Hudson, Charlie Sloan going 0-3 with that crew is hard.
Yeah, it's been, and after their time, it's
jokes on Will. Now he's at a seminary every day of his married life.
Isn't that the truth? The Lord has a sense of humor.
That's pretty good.
Well, before we cast off for today, I want to place another plug out there for our Quo Vadis retreat. If you are a young man who is a junior in high school or to age 30 and is discerning the possibility of the priesthood, I would strongly encourage you to consider going on our Quo Vadis retreat, December 30th through January 1st. Really a chance to take a deep dive in discernment. I went on 2 Quo Vadises, I think, before I entered them, both of them. One where I decided not to go into seminary was really helpful. One where I decided I was going to seminary was really helpful. It's a great retreat to pray with like-minded men. I assume both of you were on various Quo Vadises, or?
I went on one.
You went on one?
I was roommates with the aforementioned Charlie Sloan.
Oh, Charlie listens every once in a while.
But he was like in love with a girl at the time. Shocking.
No surprise.
But so I like left not thinking about seminary at all, because I was like, man, that's what he's got going sounds great. But then I was applying like 6 weeks later. So
just come to Quo Vadis.
Just come to Quo Vadis. It's a great one. Father Brett Brannon.
Yeah, that's
great.
Awesome.
Speaker. He's a great homilist, great storyteller. He's doing a great service to the diocese. Come and give this Quo Vadis. So there's no cost if you're discerning. So it's just a great way to start the new year. So consider signing up. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and it comes from Cardinal Dolan. He says, as I sit in the presider's chair and look at Mary, my mission, identity, and vocation as a priest are reaffirmed. I am reminded that in a matter of minutes at the altar, I will sacramentally provide God flesh, and with his help, the Lord will become again incarnate for his people in and through me. See you next week.